So we're here on Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph. So what I need is that you count down about 10 lines from the bottom. From the top, I meant to say. Oh, yeah. Leave the milk here and just bring me the... I'll pour it. Thanks. So the first word of the line is Rosho. And then you take your finger and you swipe it, so to speak, across the line. And you get to Boy Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah is what I call the Shas stumper. Stumper meaning that he always stumps the Gemara. And anytime you see the word Teku, you'll probably trace it back to Rabbi Yirmiyah. I remember when I was in fourth grade, they started us with Eilu Metzius. Today they've changed the minhagim already, but in those days, so Eilu Metzius starts with what's called Kav Diarba Amos. You know, if you find a certain amount in a certain location in the region. So Rav Yirmiyah wants to know what happens. You have half a kav in two amos, so you have two kav in eight amos. You know, the Gemara ends up with a take, but Rav Yirmiyah is all over the place. He's always this is not an exception. So in order to appreciate his suffix, let's just reiterate what we know. Niktam Rosho is posel, the headless hadas. Thank you so much. And you can remove that psul. How do you remove the psul of a headless hadas?
Berry grows.
Correct. Also but tomorrow, that a berry grows, and I call it the cover-up berry. That covers up the bald spot. So, you know, you have a piece of the stem that's broken off, but now there's a tamra, there's a berry that's growing out of the top of the hadas, and it's not nikar, you can't see, it's not obvious to the naked eye that it was what? It was niktam, it was beheaded. So in such a case, the halacha is that the hadas is kosher. Now, if all this happens on Erev Yom Tov, so let's talk about, let's say, a day before Erev Yom Tov, you have a perfectly good hadas. We'll call that time T1. And then Niktam Rosho, and then somebody, for whatever reason, or it falls, and it breaks the top of the stem, that's at time T2. So now it's possible. Then at time T3, let's call it Erev Yom Tov in the morning, he wakes up and lo and behold, he sees that the hadas grew a berry. He's very excited about that. So that's the case of also but tomorrow, and the hadas is kosher. What's the case of Rabbi Yirmiyah? The case of Rabbi Yirmiyah is where at time T1 it was kosher, at time T2 it was possible, and then entering into Yom Tov it was possible. And then on Yom Tov itself, Shalom Aleichem and Achim, how are you? What, you have time to join us?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Make time.
So I was always thinking of making an appointment with him as a dentist and then canceling my appointment so he would come to Shiva. I probably violated about 16 Lavin Dorais if I did that, but at least I get him into Shiva. So what happens now? On Yom Tov itself, it grew a Tamra. So when I went to sleep on the night of Sukkot, there was no Tamra. It was a headless... a headless hadas. But when I woke up in the morning, lo and behold, overnight, literally overnight, the hadas grew a tamra. So this is the suffix of Rabbi Yirmiyah. In a parallel case, let's say, for example, in dam after shechita, so in kodshim, after you shech the karban, then you makabel the dam in a mizrak, and the dam has to remain a liquid in order to be royal with zrika. And if it coagulates, then it becomes possible. Now I melt it down and I reinstate the liquid dimension of the dam. It still remains possible. Why? Because yesh dichui l'mizbeach. When it comes to the mizbeach, once rejected, that's irreversible. But can you reverse a rejection in the case of a mitzvah? Here, on Sukkot itself, as I entered into Sukkot, the hadas was possible. Why was it possible? Niktam Rosho. Now, also batam. So do I say yesh dichui b'mitzvahs, that since it was rejected when I entered into Yom Tov, therefore, even though now I've removed the rejection, meaning I've removed the sibas hapsul, because now also Batamra, can I reinstate the Hadas as it was at time T1, before the incident of Niktam Rosha, before the head was broken off? And Rabbi Yirmiyah vacillates back and forth on this question, and he comes to absolutely no conclusion. Does everybody have the case? So what would you say, Rabbi Osai, if we have a principle called Yesh Dichui Eitzel Mizbeach, in Karbonos is Dichui, then what would be your intuitive sense in the case of mitzvahs? Should we say that the same principle of Dichui applies and extends to mitzvahs?
Even called Chomer, for sure.
So it's interesting then. The Gemara insists that it's the opposite of the Kal Vachomer. Why, Mitch?
The mitzvah is a special status.
In which direction? L'kula or l'chumra? L'chumra. Exactly. We find many chumras with regard to Migdash, because you're going l'fnai v'l'fnim, you're going into the Kodesh, that we don't find in mitzvahs. For example, Hegdesh generates what's called an Isur Me'ilah, and if you violate Isur Me'ilah, you have to bring a Karma Chatas for that. You know, we don't find that in mitzvahs. So maybe I shouldn't be using my tzitzis as dental floss, but if he went and he did so, I wouldn't put him in cherem for that. It's and actually, technically, after he finishes the mitzvah of tzitzis, he wants to take off the tzitzis and use it as dental floss, he's allowed to do so. We don't do so because we're very frum, but according to the strict letter of the law, there's no din of kiddushin, there's no din of hegdish. So we're much more makel in mitzvahs than we are in hegdish. And therefore, intuitively, the Gemara's agenda is to prove that Ein Dichui Eitzel Mitzvahs, that there's no such parallel halacha of Ein Dichui Eitzel Mitzvahs. In fact, halacha of Dichui in Karban is based on halacha of Moshe Mi-Sinai, and we don't want to expand the halacha of Moshe Mi-Sinai unless we have an absolute necessity to do so. So, in this case, we're going to apply the principle of innocent until proven. Till proven guilty. So mitzvahs are considered innocent, and if we remove the sivas apsul, then ain't dichui eitzel mitzvahs. But Rav Yirmiyah is not sure about it. Maybe yesh dichui eitzel mitzvahs. So even though now on Yontif the hadas grew a tamra, right, and the berry now covers the niktam rosho, and it should be kosher, but maybe, says Rav Yirmiyah, we're going to apply the principle of dichui and yesh dichui eitzel mitzvahs, and now I can't use the hadas even though it has a tamra. But all this is because when I entered into Yontif, the Hadas was Niktam Rosho, it was Pasul. And on Yontif itself, it grew a Tamra. So on Yontif, we want to now reinstate the original Kashrus of the Hadas. And that's the issue of Dichur. If on the other hand, it grew a Tamra on Erev Yontif, so going into Yontif, it was a perfectly kosher Hadas, you can make a bracha on it, that's not Dichur. Even though at one point it was Niktam Rosho, but again, we solved the problem of Niktam Rosho before you're entering into Yontif. Here, in Rabbi Yirmiyah's context, we only solved the problem of Niktam Rosho by Osul LaTamra on Yontif itself. So a miracle happened on the night of Yontif between Kiddush on Leil Yontif in the Sukkah and daybreak the next morning. 12 hours went by, and during that 12 hours, the Hadas was working overtime and she produced a berry. And that's the issue of Yesh Dichui, because when I started Yontif, this Hadas was rejected. It was a headless Hadas. It was Niktam Rosho. And therefore it became Pasul. Even though now I've removed the Sivas HaPsul because the Hadas grew a head. It grew a berry. No. Yesh Dichui Eitzel Mitzvahs. That's one side in review. So the Gemara is now perplexed. Why did Rabbi Yirmiyah, who's such an incredible scholar and is so famous for his Iboilahus, all his fakers, all of his shots, why did he miss a beat? There's a Mishnah in Chulin which explicitly addresses this very issue and takes a stand on this issue. And that's the Mishnah of Kisui Hadam. And this is deep, deep into Masechta Chulin, like almost 90 pages into the Masechta. So we're going to get a head start on Masechta Chulin, and we're going to fast forward to Daf Pei Zayin Pei Ches in Masechta Chulin. And the Gemara says the following: V'tifshot la mehad disnan. V'tifshot means why not tip the scale on this suffix mehad disnan from the Mishnah in Chulin. The subject of the Mishnah is the mitzvah that applies after you shecht an oaf. And what mitzvah applies after you shecht an oaf?
Kisui
Adam. And the wind did the job. The wind came along before the shochet got a chance. It doesn't have to be the shochet, it could be anybody else, but before he got a chance to take the offers with an ayin, right, the dirt, and cover the blood, the wind did the job. So in such a case, he has not fulfilled his mitzvah. But the dam is covered. If the dam is covered, there's no mitzvah. So there are two premises here that we're operating with. Premise number one is that it's not enough that the dam is covered. You have to actively cover the dam. And if you didn't actively cover the dam, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of kisui adam. That's premise number one. So even though kiso aruach, still you have an obligation of kisui adam. But premise number two is that your obligation of kisui adam is contingent on the fact that the dam is exposed. And now the dam is covered. There's no mitzvah of kisui adam. So let's go through the Mishnah. The Mishnah starts with the easy case. Kisahu. He went ahead and did exactly what he had to do. He actively covered the dam. That's called kisui. He fulfilled his mitzvah. And now he was zocheh to olam haba, because when you fulfill a mitzvah, you get a piece of olam haba. Everything is fine and dandy, except what happened? Nisgala. Nisgala means the wind came along and Gilead revealed the dam. So on the one hand, he did his action and he fulfilled his obligation, but on the other hand, the dam is now exposed. Is there a mitzvah to make sure, to guarantee that the dam is covered? The answer is no, there's no such mitzvah. Your mitzvah is to cover the dam. Once you implemented that mitzvah, go home, you know, and drink the l'chaim, and everything is fine. Now the wind came along and blew the offar, and now the dam is exposed. That's not your issue. That's the first case in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah establishes the following two premises. Number one, the mitzvah requires an active element of covering the dam. But number two, once you fulfill that active responsibility of covering the dam, you're in the clear. You don't have to stand over the dam and make sure that it continues to be covered. And even if it gets exposed, you've already fulfilled, implemented your obligation, and you're fine. That's the first part of the Mishnah. Then the Mishnah goes on and says, Kisoa Ruach, what about a case where you didn't get a chance to cover the dam? The Ruach beat you to it. So the air, the wind has already covered the dam before you actively did it. You're still chayv in the mitzvah. The only thing is, it's now covered. A wind, the second wind came along. So you have wind number one, and now we have wind number two. We got a second wind, if you follow what I mean. And the second wind has now exposed the dam. So the Mishnah says, in that case, chayv lachasos, because he never implemented his act of kisui. So in the Reisha, in the first case of the Mishnah, he implemented his kisui before the wind got there. Now the wind exposes the dam. He's not chayv in kisui, he already fulfilled his obligation. In the second case, the wind beat him to it, covered the dam before he got a chance to cover the dam. Now a second wind came along and blew away the covering over the dam. The offer now is gone, and now the dam is exposed. He's now going to be chayav in the mitzvah. Why? Because he never implemented the mice of mitzvah. The wind beat him to it. So as long as the dam is covered, he's potter, because there is no dam revealed, there's no dam goli. But once the wind, as I say, on the second round, re-exposed the dam, now we have dam goli, and he's chayav. Why? Because he never fulfilled his obligation to cover the dam. So there are two conditions that could be met to exempt him from the mitzvah. Either in the first case where he did implement the dam, and even though it's now revealed, it's exposed, he's potter. And the second case is where it was never revealed. As far as he's concerned, the dam was covered and that's it. He's potter. But if one of those, if both of those two conditions are lacking, meaning A, he didn't what? He didn't actively cover the dam, and B, the dam is exposed, because the wind covered it and now the wind re-exposed it, then he's chayav in kisui adam. And the Gemara now is going to apply the rule of dichui to this case. So let's see the Gemara insights. Amar Rabba bar Bar Chanan Rabbi Yochanan lo shanu ela. When is he obligated to do the kisui? Kisha chazar v'nisgale. The wind came along on a second round and revealed the dam. Av lo chazar v'nisgale potami lechasos. If the wind covered the dam and it's still covered, then he's potter, even though he never implemented it, because the blood is covered. But if the wind came along a second round, after covering it, it re-exposed it. So again, a second ago, after the first wind came along and covered the dam, he was potter, even though he never did his maisa kisui. But now, the wind has re-exposed the dam, and he's chayev. But a minute ago, it was covered. So the Gemara says the following, Vavinan ba, that phrase Vavinan ba always means we ask the question, we raise an objection, Ki chazav in his galamai chayev, if the wind now re-exposed the dam, why is he chayev? Hol the idche, shouldn't we apply the principle of sins? It was rejected, once rejected, that's irreversible, meaning at the moment that at stage one the wind came along and covered the dam, now the dam is not exposed. If the dam is not exposed, what's its status as far as kisui? It's not machayev, there's no chiv of kisui, so that's called nidcha. The object, meaning the dam, is completely out of the realm of the mitzvah. You've rejected it because of the kisui. Now the wind comes on the second round and exposes the dam, it's already nidcha. Behold the nidcha, nidcha. Why does the Mishnah say, the way Rabbi Yochanan interprets the Mishnah, that when it becomes re-exposed, he's now back to square one, and he's obligated in the mitzvah of kisui? After all, a minute ago it was covered, and a minute ago it was nidche. On Rav Papa, so Rav Papa says, Zoso Meres, we can derive from this, that ain't dichu yetzel mitzvos, that we don't say that since it was rejected, it's irreversibly rejected, but on the contrary, we could reinstate the mitzvah, bring it back to its original state, if we remove the sivas hapsul, meaning if we take the offer that is covering the dam, and now we re-expose the dam, now he's chayev in the mitzvah. So the wind on the one hand covered the dam, who most of the farka, and then the wind itself exposed the dam, and he's chayev because of what? Ein dichui etzel mitzvahs. So what happened to Rav Yirmiyah? Like, was Rav Yirmiyah sleeping that day when they learned in the Beis Medrash the Mishnah in Chulin? Like, he skipped a beat. The Gemara is spoiling. The Gemara says, how could Rav Yirmiyah not be aware of a Mishnah in Chulin? And the Mishnah in Chulin clearly says that even though the wind covered the dam, you're not necessarily off the hook, because if the wind comes back and exposes the dam, you're chayev, meaning ein dichui b'mitzvahs. And Rav Papa spells this out clearly. How did Rav Yirmiyah miss this? So the Gemara answers the following. The Gemara says that Dirab Papa, meaning the statement of Rab Papa, Gufa itself, Miboyle, was unclear, meaning Rab Papa himself vacillated back and forth. He didn't know for sure whether Yesh Dichu Mitzvahs or Ein Dichu Mitzvahs. But let me ask you a question. Halacha l'maaseh, if I don't know if yesh dichui b'mitzvos or ein dichui b'mitzvos, what should I do in this case? On the one hand, a minute ago the dam was covered. On the other hand, now the dam is exposed. If I say yesh dichui b'mitzvos, then I'm potter. If I say ein dichui b'mitzvos, I'm chayev. What should I do in this case? Halacha l'maaseh, what would you do? We're talking about a mitzvah d'oraisa. So then what? L'chumra. So we have a principle called l'chumra, and if we don't know, l'chumra. So the Gemara says that Rav Papa thought that, you know what, maybe the Tana of this Mishnah in Chulin, he himself is in doubt. He doesn't know whether Yesh Dichui B'mitzvahs or Ein Dichui B'mitzvahs. It really depends upon the original transmission of the Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, which was given in Kodesh. We don't know if the Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai includes even what? Even mitzvahs. So we don't know. This becomes an absolute uncertainty.
Why would he have had to have made a thing? It's quite clear. Right. The stages of the Mishnah are quite clear.
No, but the Mishnah is only going with Chumrah, Michael. The Mishnah is telling you that if the wind covers it and then exposes it, then you're chayef and kisi adam. Yeah. What did the Mishnah mean? Let me give you two possibilities. One possibility is that the Mishnah held Ein dichui b'mitzvahs, and since ein dichui b'mitzvahs, we can reinstate the cheftz of the mitzvah, the object of the mitzvah, and now you're chayef. There's another way of interpreting the Mishnah, and that is that we have to assume ein dichui b'mitzvahs l'chumrah, meaning I really don't know if ein dichui b'mitzvahs. I can vacillate back and forth, but I always have to worry about the possibility of ein dichui b'mitzvahs. And if ein dichui b'mitzvahs, then now when the wind blows the offer off the dam, and now the dam is exposed, I have to be machmir because maybe ein dichui b'mitzvahs. But it could be that the Tana, the Mishnah, was not stating unequivocally that ein dichui b'mitzvahs. Maybe the Tana himself really didn't know whether the principle of dichui should apply in mitzvahs or not. But we always have to be very careful. When in doubt, be machmir. And therefore he told you, go ahead and do the kisi adam. Would he require bracha on it? I don't know. Maybe in such a case he would omit the bracha because he's only doing it l'chumra. And this was Rav Papa's suffix, which is really identical with Rav Yirmiyah's suffix. Rav Papa never meant to say zoso meres ein dichui b'mitzvahs for sure. But what Rav Papa meant to say is that we always have to consider the possibility of ein dichui b'mitzvahs. We're not sure about it, but we're going to have to take the high road, and we're going to assume l'chumra in the stricter position that maybe ein dichui b'mitzvahs. And if ein dichui b'mitzvahs, you're chayev.
I don't know, I'm unhappy about that.
Really? I was very happy about this.
Because A, the Mishnah, and B, Rav Papa, both say quite equivocally.
Unequivocally. I was the one who was responsible for
this.
But again, you know, your other option, you know, that's why I always say to you, Michael, we always have to take the least of all evils. You know, you have to do damage control. Your other option is to assume that Rav Yirmiyah missed a Mishnah. So now we're throwing out a possibility, and this is something that you should know all over Shas. Whenever you see a chumrah in a Mishnah, you always have to investigate the possibility that that chumrah is just a chumrah. It doesn't mean that the Mishnah was definite about it. The Mishnah is telling you halacha l'maisa. In practicality, what you're going to have to do when you ask the Tana of the Mishnah, the author of the Mishnah, ask him, what should I do? I have the following situation. I shechted an oaf. The dam came out. Before I got a chance to cover the dam, the wind covered the dam. And then a minute later, the wind moves in a different direction and it exposed. Now, what should I do? So the Mishnah says, you better go ahead and be machas in the dam. What did the Mishnah mean? Did the Mishnah mean that I definitely understand that ein dichui b'mitzvahs? Or did the Mishnah say maybe there's a possibility that yesh dichui b'mitzvahs? And therefore, in practical terms, you're going to always have to take the high road, cover all your bases, and you're going to have to do the kisu. Now, I have a second question. Let's assume, for argument's sake, that the Mishnah itself was unclear about the din of yesh dichui etzel mitzvahs or ein dichui etzel mitzvahs. It's a suffix. Now I have a hadas, and I want to use this hadas and make a bracha for the mitzvah of the Dalet Minim on Sukkos. But what happened? I went into Yontif, and the hadas was nikam rosh, was possible. I woke up the next morning, and lo and behold, also about tomorrow, it's got a covering over its head. I want to know, can I use this hadas? Can I apply the principle of ein dichui etzel mitzvahs? And you yourself told me in the Mishnah in Chulin that ein dichui etzel mitzvah. So why not just apply it here? And what's going to be the answer? Can I take this hadas? Absolutely not. Why not? Because now you're going to tell me that yesh dichui, that ein dichui etzel mitzvah l'kula. Now I'm going to be mekil, and I'm going to say you can fulfill the mitzvah of hadas with a dichui situation, where entering into yontif it was disqualified. That I'm not going to allow you to do. So watch what's going to happen now. We got two cases of dichui and mitzvahs in front of us. We have the case where the wind covered the dam and then re-exposed the dam. We have the case where the hadas entering into yontif was nikam rosho and then also botamra. In both cases, we have to address the issue of yesh dichui etzel mitzvahs or ein dichui etzel mitzvahs. And in the two cases, we're going to come to two different conclusions. Halacha l'maisa. In the case in chulin of kisi adam, we're going to come to the conclusion of ein dichui etzel mitzvahs. In the case of hadas, we're going to apply the principle of yesh dichui etzel mitzvahs. My high, aren't you involved in an absolute self-contradiction? How can you say yesh dichui etzel mitzvahs with regard to hadas and then apply the principle of ein dichui etzel mitzvahs In the case of Kisi Adam, the answer is, the rule is always going to be, in the case of a Safek, L'chumra and L'kula. If I go L'chumra by applying the principle of Ein Dichi Yetzel Mitzvah, so I'm going to say to you, buddy, don't walk away from this Dam. You're obligated in the midst of Dam. L'chumra, you have to consider the possibility of Ein Dichi Yetzel Mitzvah. But if you're going to ask me, can I use this Hadas? I'm going to say to you, no. Why? Because maybe Yesh Dichi Yetzel Mitzvah. Let's see the Gemara inside. The Gemara says that Rav Papa Gufei Miboyle, Rav Papa himself was confused here. On one side he said Mifshit Poshit Le, he thought that maybe it was absolutely simple and unequivocal in the Tana's mind that Ein Dichi Yetzel Mitzvahs. And when the Tana said to you, go ahead and cover the Dam, he meant B'toris Vadai. You're definitely chayav to covering the Dam, and that's because of Ein Dichi Yetzel Mitzvahs. Lo Shna L'Kula, Lo Shna L'Chumra. Because he's so convinced that Ein Dichi Yetzel Mitzvahs, he's going to apply it straight across the board. Sometimes it's bad news, and sometimes it's good news. What do I mean it's bad news? It's not such bad news if you have to do Kisi Adam, but the man is very, he's very tense, and he's very... he's on his way to a tremendous meeting, and a very important financial deal is on the table. And now you tell him go back and do the Kisi Adam, and he says to you, "I have no time." No, Ein Dichi Yetzel Mitzvahs. Comes along our Hadas man, and he says, "I want to use this Hadas because it has a Tamar on it, and we're going to say, you know what? You're allowed to use the Hadas. Why? Because Ein Dichi Yetzel Mitzvahs. That's one side in Rav Papa. Odilma, here's the second side in Rav Papa. Sefuke Misafkale, the Tana of the Mishnah was in doubt. He really had no Kabbalah. He didn't have any transmission as to whether or not the Halacha Lemo should be seen of Dichi and Karman applies to mitzvahs or doesn't apply to mitzvahs. And therefore, what he's going to do is, he's going to say, L'chumra, if it's a chumra, I'm going to have to paskin L'chumra, that Ein Dichi Yetzel Mitzvahs. And even though a minute ago the Dam was covered and it was Nidche, but now the Dam is uncovered, you're chayiv in the mitzvah. But L'kula lo amrina. Now the man wants to get off on an easy street and use this Hadas. I'm not going to allow you to be mekil and imply the principle of Ein Dichi Yetzel Mitzvahs. Here I'm going to have to say, wait a minute, my friend, maybe Yesh Dichi Yetzel Mitzvahs. And Rabosa, what this means, by the way, because I'm not sure when you and I are going to get a chance to see a Hadas that was Nitam Rosho going into Yontif, and then we woke up the next morning and it grew a Tamra. But what I'm going to tell you is that any time you have a doubt about a Hadas, and for that matter all the other three minim, as to whether it's kosher or not, I'm going to tell you don't use it. We had a Gemara back on Lamed Aleph about Shas Adchak, which means you have no other option. If you have no other option, then maybe we'll allow you to use it. Maybe we'll tell you not to make a bracha, maybe we'll tell you to make a bracha, I don't know. But if you have another option, it means a real hassle, you're going to have to go across the street to your neighbor and knock on the door, and you're davening Vasiki, you don't want to wake him up for Vasiki because you need a Hadas. So you're going to have to go to a later minyan, but you'll finally find someone who could give you a Hadas. You have to go through that whole hassle. And why is that? Because Safek L'chumra, I don't know if this Hadas is kosher or not. So in any case of a Safek, I'm going to have to tell you, don't use it. When in doubt, leave it out. Go and find another one and replace it. And one of those cases is going to be this case of Niktam Rosh of Yosef Atamra. And in such a case, we're going to say that Yesh Dichi Yetzel Mitzvahs L'chumra. And if Yesh Dichi Yetzel Mitzvahs L'chumra, this Hadas is possible. David?
I don't know, I would say, I would think that the cooler would be go ahead and use it. I would think if you're saying you're being more lenient, that would
still... No. When you have a suffix whether you're yotze a mitzvah or not, I'm going to always tell you you're not yotze the mitzvah. I can't say that if I don't know if this is kosher, I'm going to say it's kosher. And that applies to Isav HaHeter, for example. I don't know if this meat is kosher, and I'm not going to say, well, I'm in doubt. If I'm going to assume it's kosher, I'm going to eat it. In a mitzvah, the same thing applies. I don't know if I'm fulfilling the mitzvah. If I'm not, I'm not going to say to you, well, be mekil and assume you're king. No, I'm going to tell you, hassle, move, go the extra yard, and make sure that you get a kosher mitzvah. That's l'chumra. And therefore, if I apply the principle of Yesh Dichi Yetzel Mitzvahs L'chumra, meaning I'm not sure that Yesh Dichi Yetzel Mitzvahs, but I have to consider that as a valid possibility, and therefore, in the constellation of possibilities, I have to tell you, go find yourself a different Hadas. And it's going to be a hassle for you to replace this Hadas. You got this Hadas on the table, it's your head berry Hadas, and you like a head berry Hadas, right? A berry on the head. We'll have to look for a term for this. A berry on the head. And if we have to make up our own terminology, we'll do so. A berry on the head. I like this hadas. It's my favorite hadas. It's got a berry on the head. I never saw such a thing. But if we ever get to do shimush... Oh, by the way, I was in touch. I'll just read one more line in the Gemara, then I want to tell you something else. The Gemara says, Teku. I could have guessed this. Because when you have Boy Rav Yirmiya, it's always going to end up in Teku. I never got a chance to do a word search. In Bar Ilan, you could do this today. We have the computer. And I'm going to try to prove to you that every Boy Rav Yirmiya ends up with a Teku. Or at least most of them do. But I wanted to just tell you, I'm in touch with a fellow who is willing to come. Again, I have someone in my family who's willing to contribute the money for this, who's willing to come down with Lulavim and Esrogim and go through all the different possibilities and show us the various, you know, possibilities. This is what I call Shibush. Oh. The problem is, from our perspective, I'm talking to those who are here in this room, is that the earliest he could get here is about 9:30. So, Rav Mosai, you have to decide. I'm in a Parshas Drachim. What I could do is, if you gentlemen tell me, and it's going to have to be one day next week, because he can't come during Aseres Yemei Teshuva, he told me. And if you guys tell me, look, Rabbi, at 9:30 I'm out of here, I dissipate, you know, I disappear into thin air. So then I'm going to try to bring him at the end of the morning and invite my second group to come. Now, if you'll tell me that you could stay over at 9:30, then you might have two options. Why? Because he's willing to stretch it from 9:30 all the way till noon, which means that we can invite both groups. Again, not everyone's going to come. I'm not living in a fantasy world. Some of the group from the 8:30, 9:30 group hopefully will stay a little later on that morning. And some of the group that come at a quarter to 12 will hopefully come early. And he's willing to give a shimush in both lulavim and esrogim. And he claims that to know beans about either the lulav or the esrog, you need a minimum of an hour and a half for each one of them. Multiply that by two, and you end up with 3 hours. So I told him, look, Reb Chaim, his name is Chaim. I said, I don't know if I can do this for 3 hours. I don't know.
Didn't you tell him we're mumchim already?
Yeah. I told him we're oriented, but he says that he starts throwing out a list of all the psulim, and my head was spinning by the end of the conversation. Also, machazis, I mean, that's a sugya later on.
The trouble is, we'll never find the kosher seder.
Hopefully, Michael will come out just the opposite. That we'll see how many, you know, how many esrogim could be kosher.
We'll be too nervous.
They're probably bringing some for sale.
No, I don't think so. He's only bringing psulim. You want to buy the kshirim, you have to call him up. You know, so that's where I'm at now, because he wants me to call him back before Shabbos to tell him which morning we want to have. So, but first I have to make a decision together with you whether we should do. There are three possibilities. We could do 1 hour, and that'll be the end of it. And it'll be from 9:30 to 10:30 on whatever morning we choose. It could be 1 hour from 11 to 12. Or it could be the full 3 hours, and then we might just get the whole thing. Obviously, I have vested interest here, even though it's going to cost me, but I would like it to be the full 3 hours. Because he's telling me there's no way he can do both an Esther and a Lulav in 1 hour. No way.
So 9:30 to 12:30 is 3 hours.
So that's the question. You know, I just don't want to bring him here and no one's around. I mean, I have to speak to Rabbi Mize. Maybe his group would also want to join us. You know, I don't know, because... But they don't have a free moment until, I think, 11 o'clock. I don't know, I have to figure out their schedules. So Rav Mosai, what do you say? So Rav Mosai, you know, if you can give me some... I mean, I hear Don, but I don't know if Don is representing the whole group, or it's his own personal opinion. You know, we could do it from 9:30 till 12:30, and then we get the full 3 hours. Now, I'm not saying that we're going to become experts on Esrogim and Lulavim in 3 hours, but a lot of what we're learning is going to all of a sudden take on a different meaning.
If you bring in Begel and Matzah,
Hey, we get a large group. That already jacks up the price, you know. Already, you know, he charges per hour, then he charges for the transportation, and now we're going to add bagels and lox. I mean, I'll tell you what, Don, you cover the bagels and lox, and I'll tell you, you get the better of the deal. I'm okay, whatever.
I'm just an individual. For me, Wednesday or Thursday works.
So do me a favor, if you don't mind, either write this down for me on a little stickle papier or send me an email, because I'm not going to remember all the...
Should we get a show of hands who can come past 9:30? Is that a good session?
Yeah, let's get a sense. Yeah, David's right. David, can you make that announcement if everyone could just...
Right now.
Make an announcement.
Okay, out there.
No, here, right here. Yeah, let's start with us. We have first dibs here at both sides, because I'm the one who's doing this. And if Rabbi Meyer's group joins us, that's great. But right now, ich bin Baal Abbas, as we say.
Again, you're going to have to, we can't have it in here. It has to be outside.
Okay. I don't think that's terrible if we have it outside. We get more air, at least.
Rabbi Meyer's can come in here with his group. They're not that much bigger than that.
Right. All right, well, you know what? I think Michael's right. We're going to probably want to have it with his more air.
More air.
Maybe. But David, if you could make that announcement.
Who's willing to stay past 9:30 any given day next week for at least an hour or more?
Tuesday or Wednesday.
Tuesday.
Oh, so you'll have to write that to me, Mitch. You know, Tuesday.
Right.
Tuesday.
That's the first part. We have 9:30.
So Wednesday seems to be a good morning. No,
I'm gone from Wednesday.
You're gone from Wednesday. So we can't satisfy everyone here. No. Correct, because when is the latest time next week you could do it?
I can do it Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Tuesday, Jerry is out for you. Is that it? Who can do it on Tuesday?
It's important. I have another shear, but it's...
Tuesday at 9:30. All right.
How's Monday? Is Monday better? Monday possible?
Is Monday better?
It's good.
Monday?
No, Monday doesn't look too good.
Thursday, no.
All right, so let's see if we can focus on what we say Tuesday. What do we say Tuesday? Jerry, you'll see if you can push it or not, and Jeff, you'll see if you can make it on Tuesday, and we'll see. Then I'll ask my second class if they can come a little bit earlier, and then I'll tell Chaim that he can bridge both, you know, this and that. Those who can come for an hour on, let's say, if he agrees for Tuesday from 9:30 to 10:30 is great, and those who could stay beyond 10:30, that's even better. But I'm not expecting you to spend more than, you know, to stay for more than an hour. But once I see that there's a consensus for Tuesday for an hour, that already justifies bringing Chaim here, because he said he would come for an hour.
He's going to condense a 3-hour.
No, absolutely not. No, don't misunderstand me. He told me an hour is not going to cut the mustard, but he'll do whatever he can in an hour. You know, but he told me that the perfect way that he does this, and he has a lot of experiences, is a 3-hour, and it's a crash course in 3 hours. He's fitting in a lot of material into 3 hours.
So let's ask Chaim, he can stay for 3 hours.
That's not relevant. I'll tell you why, Don. Because once I know I can invite him from 9:30 to 10:30, then I'll talk to my second group and see if they can come in either 10:30 or 11, and, you know, we'll find out.
I don't know if he's going to repeat it, or is
it... No, absolutely not.
So people,
if you're here for an hour, you'll get the lulav, let's say. If you're here for 3 hours, you get the lulav plus the esrik.
Understood.
You know.
Okay.
Can you ask some guys to koala? Could they be included too for their education?
That's a philosophical question, you know, because, you know, the kolel. No, I don't disagree with you, David, but I'm saying it's sefuke misafkale, as we say. That's a teiku, because we have to know, you know, what their responsibility is. They are preparing for smicha exams. In fact, two of the fellows in our group have an exam next Thursday.
Wow.
On a massive amount of material. That's called Hilchos Shabbos, which is a 2-year course. Massive. I don't know how they walk around. I mean, I would be spending most of my time, I don't know, I don't want to tell you where, you know, after 2 years to take an exam. Okay. Let's go on, Rabosai. So we're up to Teku. Lema Kitanoi. Okay? Let's say that this issue of Yesh Dichlietzel Mitzvahs or Ein Dichlietzel Mitzvahs is really a Machlokas Tanoi. Which would be fascinating, because then this issue really predates Rav Yiriya. Rav Yiriya was an Amora. So the Gemara says the following. I want to give a little introduction. Some of this you've heard from me already. The Mishnah tells us that Hadas has to be mostly Olim and a little bit of berries, but not the other way around. Meaning if rove berries, if there are more berries than olim, than leaves, then it's possible. The Mishnah also says that I can remove the berries, and that's fine. Again, let's assume all that took place on Erev Yontif. So this would be equivalent to the case of also Batamra on Erev Yontif. So going into Yontif, we had no psul. And if going into Yontif, I remove the berries, we have no psul, and everything's honky-dory. The problem is that going into Yontif, he had more berries in Hadas than he had olim, than he had leaves. So going into Yontif, what's the status of this Hadas?
Possible.
Now he removes the Anovim on Yontif itself. Was he allowed to do that, Rabosai? He was not allowed to do that. We're going to give him patch. We'll take one of the Hadasim as a Shoite. We'll give him some smacks. But he went ahead and he did it. Again, don't ask me about Misa Bob Avera. This is not called Misa Bob Avera for about 17 different reasons, which is not for us now. But you have to just assume that there's no Misa Bob Avera here. And now the question is, can he use the Hadas? Post facto, he shouldn't have done this, but he did it. Maybe he was so desperate because he couldn't find another Hadas. So the Gemara thinks that this issue should hinge on Yesh Dichui Etzel Mitzvahs or Ein Dichui Etzel Mitzvahs. Why? Because going into Yontif, there were more Anovim, there were more berries, and the status of the Hadas was what? Possel. And now he removes on Yontif itself the Psul, but it was already Dachui. So the Gemara says that this very issue is a machlokes between Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadik, and the Chachamim. Kitanoi. The Brisa says the following: Avar v'liktan. Avar. What does the word avar mean? An avera, right? Avar is the verb of the noun avera. Let's say he did it b'shogeg. Okay, you know he didn't know that he wasn't allowed to do it. Comes along the Tanakama, and he says pasul. I'm sorry. When I say Tanakama, usually the word Tanakama means the Chachamim. But here I made a mistake. I shouldn't call it a Tanakam. So let's leave out the word Tanakam. Even though technically this is the Tanakam, because the first Tana that's mentioned in the Brice is called the Tanakam. But when he has a name, we don't call him the Tanakam. When he's anonymous, which represents the majority view, then we call it a Tanakam. So we'll cross out the word Tanakam. Divrei Rabbi Lazar Rav Tzadik. By the way, again, he's one of my favorite Tanoim, because whenever I have a sugya Rabbi Lazar Rav Tzadik, I find it very profound. We had a Derech HaLimudshir here in which we talked about a sugya in Krisus once about Dovah Shein HaMiskaveh. And that was the sugya of Rabbi Lazar Rav Tzadik. It was very, very profound. So Rabbi Lazar Rav Tzadik is not happy with this Hadas. It has nothing to do with the Avera per se, but simply because entering into Yontif, this Hadas was possible. He removed the Anovim on Yontif. That's called Yesh Dichui Etzel Mitzvahs. The Chachamim Achshirim. What do they hold? Ein Dichui Etzel Mitzvahs. That's called Lema Ketanoi, which is fascinating when you have a Sofek in an Amora, and the Gemara comes up with a Machlokes Tanoim that predates that Amora, and that Machlokes Tanoim hinges on that very Sofek, in this case of Rabbi Yirmiyah. So we've been racking our brains about a Hadas that on Yontif grew a head, it grew a berry on its head. What about the Hadas where you remove the berries on Yontif? That also is an issue of Dichui. And this Brisa records Machlokes Tanoim, in which Rabbi Lazar Rav Tzadik says that the Hadas is possel. Apparently he maintains that what? The Yesh Dichui Etzel Mitzvahs, once it was rejected, it's always rejected. We cannot resurrect its kashrus. The Chachamim say it's kosher because they hold Ein Dichui Etzel Mitzvahs. Okay, but now the Gemara says that, you know what? We may have a whole different issue here. And we cannot ignore a whole different issue. Okay, Baruch Hashem, we have still 15 minutes, am I right? Mm-hmm. Because this is one of the most profound issues in Shas. It applies here in the case of Lulav, but classically, it applies to Sukkah at the beginning of this Masechta. Okay, I'm going to write this on the board. I'm sure you've all heard of it, but it's always kedai to write it on the board, because this is a big, big whopper, you know. What do they call it when you go fishing and you get a big, big fish? a whopper? I don't know. There's some sort of phrase for it. What? Okay, we have no fishermen here. Okay. Anyway, this is called Tase Velo Minha
Asui.
Asui. Excellent. So here's the classical case. This is the first parak of Sukkah, so we get a chance to copyright a little bit at the beginning of Sukkah. Schach has to be tolish. Tolish means it's been cut off. If it's mechubar, if it's still, this would be fantastic. If Louis Yitzuyer, a sukkah could be kosher when the schach is mechubar, this would be great. I have in my backyard, well, actually, this is, I'm going back to Flatbush, I'm going back to my youth. In my youth, in Brooklyn, New York, we had in our backyard a tree that had foliage. All I have to do now, forget about the whole hassle of schach, where we had to get Jimmy. He was the our custodian in the shul, my favorite black man who I always relied upon. He knew more about halacha than most Jews did. Good old Jimmy. If he's alive today, he's 160. Anyway, so I can tell Jimmy, I don't need you today, this year. You know why? Because my tree in my backyard, right, is growing foliage. I'm just going to build my sukkah under the tree. But I can't. Because what's the status of the foliage? It's mechubal karka. Mechubal karka is posel l'schach. But you know what? I have a better idea. Instead of telling Jimmy to schlep all the schach, all I have to do, again, that's not so easy either, but get myself a good saw. Now they have electric saws. Again, I've got to be very careful with this because you can kill yourself. But if, let's say, you know how to do this, all I have to do is cut off the branches. So I build my sukkah. It's underneath heavy foliage. And I just simply cut off the branches. What happens when I cut off the branches? They fall onto my sukkah. Gemara says that's possible. Why? Because the Torah says, Shivas Yomen Tase Sukkas. And that's called Tase. Tase means we need an asiyah. You have to actively create schach. If you just remove the psul of mechubar and automatically it becomes schach, that's called asui. Asui means you didn't create the schach, but it was already potentially schach. You just did an action to remove a barrier. The barrier was the fact that it's mechubal karka. I cut it off from the karka. Now, voila, I have a sukkah. I got schach. That's not mechubal. It's tolish. That's possible. And that's a doraisa. And this has tremendous implications for tefillin and many, many different mitzvahs of tasa v'lomina asa. So it's interesting. Back in the Gemara's time, they had something called a gadish. A gadish is like a haystack. And what they used to do, this was apparently common in that society, they used to dig out in the middle of the haystack. You know, the hay was very thick and very hard, it was dry. And they used to make like little tents for, you know, for sleeping purposes. And I know during the Holocaust there were some Jews that survived in this way, and they would dig out a little bit of a hole. Now the question is, if you dig out a hole, can that be your sukkah? Because you've got kosher schach. The answer is you don't have kosher schach. Why? Because it's tasev lomenos. The schach was there already, and you didn't do anything to create the schach. You just simply carved out a hole in the middle of the gadish. So now, we have an issue in lulav. What does that mean? So let's assume for a moment, okay, you're going to have to give me some slack here, that lulav, tsarich, what's the next word? Agat. Okay, not the bus company. So what do I need? I need, in order to find lulav to be a lulav, to tie it together, to bind it together with hadasim and aros. That requires an action called agat. And if that requires an action, then it comes under the law of Taseh. And if it comes under the law of Taseh, then V'lo Min HaAsi applies. What does that mean? I have to actively create a Cheftz of a Lulav. And a Cheftz of a Lulav, a Shem Lulav, requires Agat, according to this opinion. Lulav Tzarech Agat. What happens if I bind the three Minim together, but at this moment in time, it's possible? For example, let's say I have hadasim, which I bind up, but at this point there are too many berries on the hadasim, correct? So I've already done the agad, and it's possible. Now what do I do? I surgically remove what?
The berries.
That's called mina osel, because the agar itself was posel, and now all I'm doing is removing the psul, but I don't actively do an agar, because to actively do an agar, I don't have to do an agar that's kosher. So it could be that there's a whole other issue going on here between Chachamim and Rabbi Elazar for Rabbi Tzaddik. They're not debating the issue of Yesh Dichu Yetzel Mitzvahs or Ein Dichu Yetzel Mitzvahs. Lama Zogin will say that everybody agrees that Ein Dichu Yetzel Mitzvahs, because that's our agenda for today. We don't think that since there's Dichu in Kachin, we should expand it. You know, let's do damage control. In Kachin is a Chumra of Yesh Dichu, but there's no such Chumra in Mitzvahs. So why is Rabbi Elazar for Rabbi Tzaddik upset about removing the berries? The answer is because there won't be an agad. What do you mean there won't be an agad? There is an agad. The answer is I did the agad before I removed the berries. And if I did the agad before I removed the berries, what's the status of this agad? It's possible. Why is it possible? Because the adasim apsulim, now I removed the berries, but I didn't do a kosher agad. I mean, I have a good answer for a blossom and a something. Okay, just do the agad again. You'll start from scratch. Okay, but in the meantime, right, what's the status of this lulav now? If I took a picture of the lulav, it looks exactly like a lulav that's kosher. All the minim are kosher. I have an agad. Everything is wonderful. But there's only one problem. The maisa agad that I had to do was done bipsul. And therefore, until I remove the agad and replace it with a new agad, I got a problem. So Memela, the Gemara is going to argue, how do you know that the machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and Tzaddik and the Chachamim revolves around the issue of what? Yesh dichu b'mitzvahs or ein dichu b'mitzvahs? Name! I'm going to tell you everybody, kuliyamalo pligi ein dichu b'mitzvahs. So what part is Rabbi Elazar and Shimon, Rabbi Elazar and Tzaddik? Not the issue of dichu. He's barred by the issue of asiyah. And here, Rabosa, we get to a phenomenal issue. Very fundamental. What does agad mean? Does agad mean that I have to actively make the agad? What happens if I ask my 5-year-old to make the agad? Or, for that matter, I ask my friend Jimmy to make the agad. Is there a lach of maisa agad? In the case of sukkah, the Torah says what? Tasel chasukkahs. Once the Torah adds the word tasel, it means what? An asiyah, an active creation of the sukkah. I got to put the schach down. And by the way, if you ever get tassel v'lo min ha'asiyah in a psul of sukkah, which by the way is a very common issue in sukkah, then you have to lift up the schach and let it go down again, put it down again, to create an asiyah that replaces the first asiyah, because the first asiyah was the psul. What about agad? Is there a lach of asiyah in agad? So I'm going to tell you, vushtet, where does it say in the Torah that you have to make an agad?
Anyway.
No, I'm asking something else, Michael.
No, it's a matter of Rabbi Yehuda says yes.
Correct. No, I'm asking according to Rabbi Yehuda. Ah. Let's assume I grant you that lulav tzarech agad. But what does that mean, lulav tzarech agad? Does lulav tzarech agad mean A, that I have to do an asiyah of thing, right? Like we said before in Kisi Adam, I need an asiyah. I got to actively cover the dam. And if the dam was covered because the wind worked in my benefit, that's not a mitzvah of Kisi Adam. So too in agad. You can't just magically, oh, there is an agad. No, I have to actively do an agad. Or if I want to be argumentative about it, I would say to you, where does it say in the Torah that you have to make an agad? Even if I hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda's only saying that you need agad, but it doesn't mean you need a maisa agad. You need a mitzias of agad. You need a situation. I could ask someone who's completely excluded from mitzvahs. I can ask a sleepwalker, right? He's walking in his sleep. The guy has no consciousness whatsoever, right? And he does an agad in his sleep. I hypnotically, we don't have any psychiatrists in the room, do we? Okay. Today in shul, I sat next to a psychiatrist. I didn't call him a shrink because, you know, they get very sensitive about that. But in my youth, we used to call him a shrink. We never meant it pejoratively, by the way. But it's not the nicest thing, you know. Once I was in Rami Levy. Now, nothing against Rami Levy, but the line was incredible. I have no patience. I mean, my wife has been trying we're married 41 years. I just don't have the patience. So thank God, Hashem was with me. The guy in front of me online was a shrink. So I kept saying to him, help me, because I'm about to lose it. You know, my marbles are going really fast. And I meet this guy from time to time, and I always thank him that he kept me going. You know, we didn't have a couch, but I didn't want to tell my father's favorite joke. My father used to say that once a guy came over to the psychiatrist, and he asked him, don't you get depressed? You know, these people, Nebuch, they sit on the couch, they lie on the couch, and they pour out their hearts, and they're depressed, and everything, and it accumulates over years. So the psychiatrist answers, who's listening? Anyway, so what I'm saying is that we don't really know whether or not the Torah requires an active agav or just a reality of agav, a situation of agav. If the agav happens through someone who doesn't even have a conscious mind, you know, he's mindless, then there will also be an agav. All I need is the agav. I don't need the maisa agav, I need the agav. But this Gemara assumes that if lulav tzarech agad, it means you actively require an asiyah. Once I actively require an asiyah, I'm going to apply the principle from Sukkot, taseh v'lo mina asui, and that's going to be Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzarek's problem. Why? Because at the moment you did the agad, what was the situation of the hadas? It was full of what? Berries. It had too many berries. It was overly buried. No, that didn't sound right.
Very buried.
That sounded very morbid. Overly buried. The Chevra Kedisha did too good of a job. It was overly buried. So then what does he do? He removes the berries. Ah, where's the asiyah of the aga? The asiyah of the aga itself was the psul, and now you remove the rug from under its leg, and now you want to be mashrit. That's a psul of tasa voluminos. So you're done.
Why in Kisili Hatam you don't apply the same principle? The wind took it. Right. I didn't do anything. So
correct.
So why don't I have an obligation to?
No, but you don't have. No, because there is no dam. If there's no dam, you're not obligated. For example, if you're not wearing a four-kinded garment, you're not chayv in tzitzis. If there's no dam, then you're not chayv in kisi adam. You follow?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but the dam is there. It's just that it was covered.
Once it's covered, it doesn't exist. As far as kisi adam, it doesn't exist. Because the machayev, again, in Lomdish terms, we would say the machayev, meaning what generates the chiyuv, is dam megula. If there's no dam megula, there's only dam mechusa.
Okay.
Even if a monkey came along and covered the dam, it doesn't matter. There's no dam megula.
Okay.
But now chayv in the midst of agad, and the Gemara thinks that if I hold lulav tzarech agad, and maybe Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzarek maintains that position, then I need an asiyah. I have to create the agad. And if I have to create the agad, it means I have to create it behechsher and not bepsul. My problem is that the hadasim, which I bound together with the lulav and the aravos, are full of berries. They're overly buried. And if that be the case, just by removing surgically the berries, that's a violation of the principle of v'lo mina asui. So Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzarek has nothing to do with the Yeshdicha Yetzal Mitzvahs. And you have no right to pin him down and hold the Yeshdicha Yetzal Mitzvahs. Really ain't the Yeshdicha Mitzvahs. And the fact that he was Machshav Hadas, even though it was possible, that doesn't bother Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzarek one iota. What bothers him is the agad, because this is not considered an agad. Again, if you assume that lulav tzarech agad means an asiyah, the only problem is vushtet. Where does it say in the Torah that you need an asiyah? In the case of sukkah, the Torah itself explicitly requires an asiyah sukkah. You should know there's a principle called mitzvah bo yosef and ashmi b'shlucha. Did you ever hear that? If I have two choices, I could do the mitzvah myself, or I could send you to do the mitzvah. What's my first primary option? I do it myself. And the Netziv Mivalojin, the great Rosh Yeshiva Valojin, asked the following question. He says, what about building a sukkah? Should you do it yourself? So he says he has sources to prove that, yeah, you should do it yourself. So he asks the following question. He says, what do you mean do it yourself? Building a sukkah is not a mitzvah. Where does it say that building a sukkah is a mitzvah? What's the mitzvah? To sit in the sukkah. So he says that there's something called a hechsher mitzvah. A hechsher mitzvah means a preparatory stage. But it's not the mitzvah itself. So do we apply the principle of mitzvah bo yosef v'mishlucho to a hechsher mitzvah? So the Netziv came up with fantastical formulation. Has tremendous repercussions. He says the following. There are two types of hechsher mitzvah. There's the classical hechsher mitzvah, like for example, you know, if I need tzitzis, I got to tie the tzitzis, you know, I got to tie it with all the dinim and so forth, so attach it to my beggar. There's a classical hechsher mitzvah, the mitzvah is to wear the beggar, not to make the tzitzis. So weaving the tzitzis, he says, that's a hechsher mitzvah. What he says is something called a hechsher mitzvah, ksuva b'Torah, that the Torah itself mentions the hechsher mitzvah. And his example is sukkah. And some of the poskim want to say that baking matzahs is also a hechsher mitzvah hakosuv b'Torah, because the Torah says also to make matzahs, and therefore it's better to bake your own matzahs. I have a friend who, together with his whole group, they rent an oven and a bakery. It costs them home tofot, and by the way, it takes them 8 hours. He ends up with 3 matzahs, all of which are burnt to a crisp, because they don't know how to bake matzahs. And I said to him, Rabbi, I won't mention his name, he's a big Talmud Chacham. I said to him, why not spend that 8 hours learning Torah? Like, you got to get involved in baking matzahs? Like who bakes matzahs? Well, he does. So he said, no, it's a hechsher mitzvah ksuv b'Torah, mitzvah boyosev b'shlucho. I don't want to send the shliach to make my matzahs, I want to bake the matzahs myself. All right, Rabbi, we'll stop here. This was an introduction to one of the most profound shasugyas called, number one, Yesh dichu yetzel mitzvah, or Eim dichu yetzel mitzvah. Number two, Tasev olovan osi. And the overlap of two major sugyas, it's like an explosion. You know, usually if we have one major sugya in Shas, that's enough. Here we have two major sugyas in Shas. I want to wish everyone a great day and a great Shabbos. And I'm giving a Chumash class today if anyone's around at 11. And that Chumash class is going to be dedicated to the mitzvah of Bikurim. It's a fantastic mitzvah. And it makes up the first unit of this week's parsha. Okay, then?
Sure,
good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.